Hey, everybody, it's me here, Michael Franti, on the Stay Human podcast. Man, we are super excited because we've got a new album that is coming out. It's called Work Hard and Be Nice. 17 songs, that's right, you heard it, 17 songs filled with optimism and stories about how we get through challenging times and still hold on to our humanity. We can't wait to get back out on the road with you guys, so stay tuned to all of my socials. You'll get the information first about when we're going to be touring next. In the meantime, enjoy all the songs on the album, Work Hard, Be Nice. You can Spotify it. You can stream it all over the place. You can download it on iTunes. You can even get the CD from michaelfranti.com. So check it out.
Stay Human podcast. I am Michael Franti, and we are here in Templeton, California, which is one of the most beautiful places this time of year. Man, it is. We've hit it just like exactly right, because if we were here like maybe 5 days ago, it would have been like 7 million degrees out here. And in a couple of weeks, it'll start chilling out. It gets a little chilly in these foothills. So we are, man, the weather is perfect here. We're at the Whale Rock Festival.
Yes, ma'am.
And this place is really an interesting vineyard, because the Whale Rock, I was like, where'd you guys get that name? And I just thought, like, in my head, I'm thinking, that's just a dope-ass name. You know, like, I would call my thing Whale Rock just because it sounded cool. But they actually have petrified whale bones that they found in this vineyard. So this, you know, in my head, you know, I always take it to the most spiritual place. So I'm thinking, oh, this was like a spiritual, like, graveyard where whales would come to, like, have their last moments, pass away, and all their bones ended up here. But I have no scientific basis for that. That's just my, yeah. But we are here today with an incredible group who I have yet to hear. Yes. I just read their bio and I thought it was super cool. We've got Los Cafeteras here. Check it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we got Denise and we got Hector.
Yes.
Tell us about you. Where are you guys from? Or where are you based now?
Oh, that's a complicated question, but I'm going to give you the short answer.
Yeah. All right.
We're from LA. We are from LA. We're Chicanas, Chicanos, doing Afro-Mexican, urban folk,
punk.
Rap. Chicano, open heart, higher conscious music.
So, did you grow up in LA?
Yeah, born and raised.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And what part?
I'm from Southeast LA.
You're from Southeast LA. Yeah. Okay. And so what was it like growing up there?
Well, growing up in Southeast LA, it's very Mexican. It's very highly concentrated in immigrant Mexicans. My parents are from Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was born and raised in LA, my sister too. So it's interesting. There's a blend of cultura, of cultures in LA in general. But it was all about your parents work hard, expect you to live the forest of American dream, and then it's very complicated when you grow up and you say, hey, I still have loans to pay, and I haven't bought a house, but I'm living my dream.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
so
it's just about hard work.
When you were a kid growing up, tell me about your earliest memories as a kid.
My earliest memories, and I think back at this, and really it was a lot about, I mean, when you grow up with undocumented parents, it's a lot about fear, it's a lot about not really understanding what's going to happen to your family. It's about navigating between different cultures, about not really understanding who you are. Are you Mexican? Are you American?
Mm-hmm.
What language is your language? And so my first language was Spanish, and then I forgot it because there's a lot of messaging and shame that comes
with watching TV
being,
and just
So it's like, is that who I am? I don't want to be that. Right? And then growing up and really understanding, like, there's a beauty behind culture and tradition, and you have ancestral, you know, dreams that it still carry you, and even energy and strength. And so growing up, there was just, you know, it was a lot of, like, who am I? When am I? Who am I supposed to be in this world? And now as an adult, you know, I feel that it's my duty as a brown woman, as a feminist, to really represent for Chicanitas out there, for nice. For other women, to not just be seen as an accessory on a stage, but I have a lot to say. I'm going to say it.
Yeah.
To take up a lot of space and to be able to disrupt a narrative of my people in a way that still makes people happy.
Nice. I like that. I like what
you said. I wanted to be a Dodger.
Come on up here. Come on up here. Just grab the mic.
So, you know, mine's a little bit different. If you would have asked me up until age 15 what I wanted to do in my life.
Yeah.
I wanted to play shortstop for the Los Angeles Dodgers. You know what I'm saying? That's what I wanted to do. I wanted to be Steve Sachs.
I'm glad you did it. And you know why? Because I'm a Giants fan.
I know you are. You're the Bay Area.
You're going to be on my bus.
You're Bay Area, man. Hey, but you know what? Giants, y'all, hey, Romo.
Los Gigantes.
Hey, man. Giants have been great. Dodgers are kicking ass now.
It's all good.
We're doing good. So I'm glad, man.
I'm happy,
this shows that Dodger fans and Giant fans can be in the same place. We can get along. If we can do it, anybody can do it. Israel, Palestine, you can do it too,
easy.
Man. You know, that's easy. Dodger and Giant fans, that's hard.
So tell us about your family.
You know, it's not that different from Denise. My mom is from Morelia, Michoacan. Mm-hmm. She came when she was 14 years old. She crossed the border with 7 brothers and sisters.
What was their dream? What did they want when
You know, when I asked my mom didn't necessarily, she doesn't talk about her dreams growing up. She talks about surviving.
Yeah.
She got put into foster care. She graduated. You know, she met my pops. My dad was sort of like this border kid who was shot. Mm-hmm. He was in a hospital. My mom used to be with a church group. My aunt called my mom to say, go pray for this man who's dying, my brother.
Mm-hmm.
My mom goes to pray for this guy, and he survives, and it's my dad.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying? That's how they met. And so, like, there, and my dad converted. My dad used to be, you know, addicted to heroin, and he flipped.
Wow.
He said, the day he stopped using drugs was the day I was born.
Wow.
You know? And so they got really involved in the church, and my mom raised 6 kids, and when we all grew up, she went back to school.
Mm-hmm.
She went in theological seminary. She got multicultural studies and liberation theology degree.
Wow.
She was running a church in Compton. So my mom really was just around, like, her life was really about, like, serving Jesus. That was her thing. Okay.
And what kind of work were they doing?
My mom always did church work.
Okay.
My dad was a carpenter. So it kind of makes sense. You know, he's like Jesus work. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
There you go.
He did that Jesus labor.
Nice.
But my dad was a carpenter. My mom did church work. And you know, they raised a family. I think once they had kids, like, their life was about, us
and
growing
for you,
up.
What did your parents do?
My mom's a seamstress. And so she makes a lot of the outfits I wear on stage.
Oh, wow. Stand up. Let's see.
Well, not that. but I like to honor her work by wearing it on my body.
Nice.
She's an artist, and, you know, I don't think she knows
the
honor that I have by wearing the work. My dad actually worked for motion pictures. He's a mold maker.
Uh-huh.
So he'd work on movie sets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so they're both very hard workers. And they.
Yeah.
So at what point in your childhood growing up, you're talking about before how there's this mix, you know, and this dichotomy in your life of being from this immigrant family, and now you're in America, and there's these pressures between these two cultures. And so at what point did you start playing music? Like, was it during any of that, or?
You know, it's interesting. I didn't start playing music till after grad school.
Oh, wow.
So I'm actually I'm a clinical social worker by trade. I did a lot of work in mental health, primarily with undocumented women who were surviving domestic violence.
Yeah.
And so it's a healing kind of work. And so music became my healer. And I started dancing folklorico, which is Mexican folk dance, when I was 15. And I always say it saved me from myself because I had a lot of self-injuring kind of tendencies.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was the only way I felt free. And after grad school, we started playing music in this community center called the Eastside Cafe with Zapatista principles, right?
Yeah.
Creating a world where many worlds fit. Understanding that the beauty and the skills and everything we need in our own communities, we already have.
Mm-hmm.
It's just about digging them out and honoring them. And so we started playing music. I was already in my mid-20s. And it was kind of mind-blowing for me that at that age, I was still discovering myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I was discovering my voice. And even with our friends, we were raised to be quiet and you know, not being seen. And as I think brown people, a lot of times we even see our own bodies in this different way, right? Either bodies for labor, for resources for other people, but it's like, how do we honor our own stories as people who are Mexican American, as people whose stories often get derailed, right? Or often don't really appear in history books. How do we like take those out, make them beautiful again, and remind people that, hey, like, we not only exist, but we're a beautiful people, we're a beautiful culture, and this culture is still really alive. We're not a museum, in a museum, right? With traditional instruments, and as, you know, 20-something-year-olds, we were still discovering that, and so, you know, it was, again, something that saved me from myself in a point where I didn't really understand why I was doing what I was doing, right?
Hey everybody, it's Michael Franti here on the Stay Human podcast. A few years back, my wife Sarah and I decided that we would start a nonprofit with the intention of bringing people with advanced stages of life-threatening illness, children and adults with special needs, and wounded veterans to see any live concert by any artist in any city in the world. And from that, Do It For The Love was born. If you have a friend or family member who needs music in that way, just write to us at doitfortheLove.org, and we'll make sure to get them out to see any concert in any city by any artist. Do It For The Love, y'all.
Hector, grab the mic. What was the hardest thing for you as a teenager?
You know, it's interesting. I was the oldest of six. I was raised by a single mom. You know, my parents divorced when we were young. But I remember when we graduated high school, we were homeless for about a year. Mm-hmm. And then so we had to move in with my aunt. So there was like, it was six of us, my mom plus my godmother. Mm-hmm. And we had to move in with my aunt in a one bedroom. Wow. And I remember that was a really, really difficult time. Mm-hmm. But it was
so,
like.
And you, as being the oldest, were you kind of like in a dad for
a lot of the time? You know, there was a lot of tension between my parents. So my dad didn't want to take any of the kids.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I felt like this incredible responsibility with my mom, and also to make sure that, you know, when my mom was having a hard time, that I was making sure taking care of the kids and my family, but we're all really tight, but making sure that it wasn't a bad time. So, you know, when we think back to it, it was actually, you know, every night we would eat dinner together.
Yeah.
You know, we would all sleep on the floor like enchiladas, you know what I'm saying? And there was one couch. So like so on Mondays I had the couch. Tuesday David had the couch. Wednesday Andres. Friday Luisa. And so we made it like a game. So it would always be like, hey, whose day is at the couch? We would celebrate that person. They would get the best dessert. You know, so we did things together, and I remember at that time working really hard to make sure that that we stay together as a family, and we didn't see this as a negative thing, that actually, you know, this is a gift. This is an opportunity for us to be closer. And now, like, our family's tight. But I remember that was just a really, really hard time. And it also helped me understand that that being homeless does not just mean being on the streets. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of folks who can't afford to live.
Yeah.
Multiple families in one household. A lot of folks through health bills and hospital bills and healthcare system can't afford them and actually, you know, become homeless. Yeah. And so it was a thing that happened in my life that really opened my eyes to a lot of injustices, you know, and folks just trying to like live and be good, but couldn't.
Yeah.
You know, and so that really enabled us, like, you know, we're movement kids. Mm-hmm. So we met doing organizing, student organizing, doing Zapatista inspired work. Mm-hmm. And that's part of our, you know, our ethos as musicians now. I was an organizer for 8 years. Yeah. Denise ran the Gender and Sexuality Center at Cal State Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. For 6 years, and now our music sort of, we tell the hidden stories of LA, but we ain't mad,
because
we still here, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's the thing, like, we still here, we survived, and so part of our stuff is around celebrating that stuff, you know, and so turning anger into energy, you know, because anger is a real thing, but if it's not controlled, man, it can be a very negative emotion that can, dangerous emotion.
Yeah.
That can eat you up, man. And for us, like, our performance is a way for us to manifest energy in a positive
focus
way.
Focus it in
the Yeah, way. Man. Because it can eat you alive. It's eaten a lot of my family alive. I've seen it.
Denise, I want to just ask a bit about the music. And at what point did music come into your life? So was your household filled with music all the time? Or just, you know, you just listen to your own music? Or what was your musical
It's funny. I knew what kind of music was playing. By what music was playing was what kind of chore I was going to be doing that weekend. If it was like
she'd butter you up.
Juan, yeah. Music you like. If it was like Juan Gabriel and Rocío Dúrcal, it's like indoor, like yeah. You know, polish all the furniture.
Okay.
If it was rancheras, it means like go cut the like go mow the lawn.
Okay.
It's like who's playing music? All right, I'm yours this weekend. So yeah, I mean, music is in us, right? It's. Part, I think for my parents, it reminded them of their home country.
Yeah.
And then, you know, high school, I was, like, really into, like, dark, like, The Cure.
Yeah.
Like, Portishead.
Yeah.
Like,
Riot Girl.
And I think music
Morrissey.
Helped. Morrissey. Yeah. Well, yeah, nobody outgrows Morrissey. Yeah. That's one thing. Yeah, anything that was depressing, I was like, yeah.
Yeah.
So my mom was like, you are weird.
What is it? I've always wondered, what is
it
about the Morrissey Mexican?
We love to suffer.
Because I love Morrissey. Is that it?
I think it's the...
I love the Smiths.
Irish.
Yeah. Growing up.
Yeah. No, he's not Irish. But I think...
Yeah, grab it, yeah.
You know, in Mexican culture, there's a lot of like the rancheras, banda music, mariachi.
Yeah.
Like, I think because Mexican culture is so machista and very masculine.
Yeah.
A lot of men hide their feelings.
Yeah.
But the music, like the sort
brings
of like
it out.
Brings it out. Yeah. So men love the music because it's a way for them to express themselves that they're not able to like in everyday life. And I think Morrissey as this male figure singing these like depressing heartache ballads really, really touched like I think the Mexican community in a way that I think like it reminds us sort of like of this heartache and of these emotions that we can't always express.
Yeah.
You know, growing up in like you know, in homes that tell you not to cry, in a culture that sort of denounces male sort of sensuality and emotions. And I think Morrissey really, I don't know how he does it, man, but damn it, I love him.
I love him.
We love you, Morrissey.
So tell me about the group. Tell me, first of all, how did you guys get the name? And then secondly, give me a little bit of the origin story. And then after that, we're going to ask a couple questions that you guys be thinking about.
Well, we started playing Son Jarocho at the Eastside Cafe. So everywhere we'd go,
what is that Son Jarocho?
Son Jarocho is Afro Mexican music from Southern Veracruz in Mexico. It's a slave music, and so when people were taken from West Africa and basically imported into the Americas, they did it through the port of Veracruz.
Yeah.
So a lot of people don't know that there's an African culture element. And life.
They call the third roots.
The third root in Mexico.
Yeah.
You know, and in Mexico, there's still turned a blind eye to the darker identity. And so Son Jarocho is a blend of that. It's a blend of African, Spanish, native, indigenous cultures and sounds.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a way for people to communicate during times of slavery, the times of the Spanish Inquisition. And so, and you know, Hector always says when they outlawed drums, they started using their feet.
Okay.
Right? So it's very percussive, call and response, very communal.
Nice.
And it's very beautiful. But 400 years later, here we are still trying to tell our stories, right? And so we use the roots of Son Jarocho music from Southern Veracruz, black music from Southern Veracruz, to not only understand a piece of history that we didn't know about, but also to bring out parts of history that maybe the generations after us will want to know about.
Okay.
And so we do it in English and Spanish. A lot of us don't even speak Spanish very well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and that also comes with being, you know, Mexican-American.
Being in the
like,
culture
it depends. That, like, it really depends on how your parents raised you.
How did you guys get together? Hector, you want to?
Yeah.
So we're all homies, you know. Me and Denise dated for 8 years, so
that's the next podcast.
That's another podcast. That's another podcast right there.
Yeah, we want to get.
So you know, her and Jose, the drummer, they went to college together and did student organizing. Me and Frenchie, we met trying to protect the largest urban farm in the United States, the South Central Farm. There's a great documentary called The Garden.
Yeah.
So we were part of that movement,
and
we started playing music in this space called the East Side Cafe.
Okay,
it was a Zapatista-inspired space that believes in the principles of self-determination, autonomy, and that's what we learned. And so when we would go play in marches in the streets, people say, "Oh, the cafeteros from the cafe."
Okay,
the people in the cafe. But we had women in the group.
Yeah.
And so the women were like, "We're not cafeteros. We're cafeteras.
Okay."
And so we're like, yeah, you're right. So we actually then decided to call ourselves Las Cafeteras instead of Los Cafeteros, and sort of kind of part of our ethos that we're against patriarchy and all levels, and including language. And so that's why we're called Las Cafeteras. Awesome. And we took on the feminine name.
Awesome. Yeah, yeah. You guys got some questions?
So making a living in the music industry, I'm sure, is really challenging. And I'm kind of curious, you know, tell us about that and like what's your tour schedule like and how you make ends meet?
Yeah. We take donations.
In all denominations, any currency,
we don't
big
discriminate.
Or small.
Meals, hugs. Yeah. You know, it's hard. You know, there's some months that are really good months, and you're like, yes, I can pay bills, and I can go to Olive Garden. but it's really a labor of love, right? And I think for us, it's not only a labor of love for the music, for us as artists, but also for the people that need healing in different ways. And so it's worth it, you know? And it's difficult, but we always say, you know, we have to invest. And I quit my job. I was the last one to quit my job. I loved my job, but I was also going crazy, kind of like balancing, like getting into the airport, going to my office, trying to like work with students that were, you know, going through some tough things. But then I said, like, I need to take a risk, and I need to live a life that I'm scared of. Yeah. You know, and I'm here to say, like, I'm always kind of like, okay, what's gonna happen? But when I talk to my dad, and you know, he has a difficult time kind of adjusting to this, kind of like, why did I do everything I did so that you can like quit your job and like, you know, and I say, you didn't work so hard just so I could, again, be part of like this labor system. You gave me a chance to dream, to take risks, and I have to know that if I invest in it, it's going to come back to me. And it does, because we've traveled all over in places I would have never been. And so I'm living a full life. And yes, I sometimes overthink the money thing, but I really believe that it's going to come back to me, and that I'm going to be taken care of in some way or another. And that if I can't be taken care of by my music, my friends are going to take care of me, because really, like, we're family.
We're in it together.
And so we're going to do it together. And it is what it is. And, you know, sometimes you have to let that go, because music, I mean, money is, it's an illusion.
Right on.
It's really inspiring.
Any other questions?
I'm a Leo.
So much that's going on in the world right now, and the, you know, our crazy president right now, and trying to build walls and stuff. I own a business. I have, but you know, I have American, you know, white employees, and I have Mexican employees, and we're just like one big family. And you know what? I travel all over the world, and I meet people over the world, and it's just sad that we're trying to build walls and waste fucking money doing stupid shit like that when we should just all be getting along. And I have three daughters, and I love what the message that you guys are saying, because they're going to be stoked to listen to you guys, and that you guys are just fire. You guys are fire.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Hey, we have a rendition of This Land Is Your Land, but like a Norteño version. Like So we're going to play that right now. So I want y'all to pick it up. It's good, man.
Yeah, man. And then we if the Dodgers make it to the series, we're all going to go.
Hey, we can do it. We can do it. First shot. Come on.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. You want to talk about that for a second? Just the climate that we're living in right now is a super challenging climate. We hear on a daily basis our president scapegoating any number of people, either political leaders, individuals in society, or whole groups of people. And Mexican-Americans Mexican immigrants have been a group that the president has called out by name on a daily basis and scapegoated. How is that being for you, for your family's history, you know, what are your perspectives?
I think this is an opportunity for America to become the country it needs to be. Like, we are given, like, as hard of a time it is the opportunity. And like, as individuals, there's a point, like, individually we all had to make a decision on what kind of person we wanted to be. If we wanted to be good people, principled people, we had to make decisions, you know, that we're towards that path. And as a country, we're making that decision, and we're giving the opportunity to be part of that or not be part of it. And we invite people to be part of a just country, man, where we want to build a world where many worlds fit. You know what I'm saying? And we're doing a lot of work. We're doing a lot of work in our communities, because I think there's also a myth, you know, where like, where we talk about like, where white folks are the only people who can be prejudiced. Mm-hmm. And that's not true.
Yeah.
You know, like, I know I come from a Mexican family, and I always say my dad was super homophobic. He would make a lot of comments about Middle Eastern folks. I have a lot of, you know, those people in my family that make a lot of comments and statements that are, that they just don't know. Mm-hmm. So we got a lot of unlearning to do, and we can do it together. You know, always ask. Don't assume. And if you're wrong, just say you're sorry. And I think those three things, man, we can go a long way. We can go a long way, man. And Trump, if it wasn't Trump, you know, today it would have been somebody else. You know, I saw a sign that said, Trump did everything in his power to prove he was unfit to be president. You know what I'm saying? He did. Yeah. And so, like, it's not about him. It's about us and what do we want to create. And so everybody should be doing work in your block, in your neighborhood, making sure, like, the people around you feel good, feel safe, and, you know, that we want to build a just society. Everybody, if you have health care, I want health care. Mm-hmm. If you want your kids to have a good education system, so do I. You know, we actually want the same things. Yeah. And so that's why I think we need to be rolling too. You know what I'm saying? And so that's it, man.
Yeah. Yeah, we end this podcast the same way every time. And it's called the Stay Human Podcast. And the idea behind it is that we live in this world that's constantly trying to suck the humanity out of us. We're told that you are your amount of friends you have on Facebook or that money that's attached to your ATM or in some way you're compartmentalized as either an ethnic group or a gender or a sexuality or a party. But how do you stay human? How do you hold on to your humanness?
Oh, man. I hang out with my cats. I mean, it's just, I think I have a lot of anxiety. I have panic attacks and I think that's, like, the most bare-boned, like, humble experience. And yeah, everything gets stripped away. And I'm not saying that's my solution. I just think that's my mind and my heart reminding me I'm not a superhuman. And so it reminds me to go back and get back in, right? And be in my quiet space. And dance is really what does that for me, because it's when I honor my most highest self. And I think everyone has a part of themselves that's, like, the part that they don't like other people to see. And, you know, unfortunately, like, mine is scary for people to see. But I have people that care about me that can, like, hold on and remind me, like, I have to love myself no matter how ugly I feel that day, no matter how out of control. And so I need to heal myself through dance, because that's when I was, again, when I was 15, that's when I was hurting myself the most. And it takes me back to that place, and I say, Denise, just dance, and you'll be okay.
Yes, Hector, how about you?
Oh, I'm gonna be thinking about that question for a minute. I'm seeing a life coach right now, and someone who's really helping me think about who I am and where I want to go. And it's been great to really talk to somebody about that. And I feel she asked me a question the other day. She said, "If you were your own best friend, what would you tell yourself in order to guide you in the direction you want to be?" So I want everybody to think about, like, you are your own best friend. And what would you tell yourself? What would you tell your best friend that you've seen grow up? You know, what are the three things? For one is forgive myself, forgive yourself. I think there's a lot of things I've done in my life that I hold inside and I haven't been able to forgive myself. And I know that because there's people that have done wrong to me, I haven't been able to forgive them. And that anger allows me not to forgive myself. So forgiveness is something that, in moving forward, I really have to, really learn about and really practice. And that's not, you can't fake that. You know, that's from a very real place, and I thank you for even opening up the space to talk that. Denise, thank you for sharing that about, you know, the panic attacks and anxiety. I know that's a real thing for you, and we all have our things. And so I encourage people to, like, connect with folks that are close to you, share that, and ask them for support along the way, you know?
Thank you. How can folks get a hold of you or find out where you are, get your music?
LasCafeteras.com.
We're on Facebook. Instagram.
We're going to be on stage in about 15 minutes, so we got to go.
We better get you.
Thanks a lot for having us.
Los Cafeteras, you got Hector and Denise. Thank you for being here so much on the Stay Human Podcast. Yay!
Hey, everybody. This is Michael Franti here on the Stay Human podcast. And I've traveled all throughout the world, and I've been to many inspiring places. And one of my favorites is Bali. I fell in love with its people and nature the first time that I came here in 2007. And at that time, I had a dream to build a place that was dedicated to music, soul, and wellness. And from that, the Soulshine Bali Hotel was born. It's my boutique hotel located in the heart of Bali, surrounded by beautiful rice fields and the most incredible sunsets that you might ever experience. We do over 50 retreats a year, or you can just come here and spend a night on your own. So follow us on Instagram at Soulshine Bali.